how are they so creative with this? Like, how do they even come up with doing these things to people? My closet looked clean, tidy, and organized. And that's what was scary. All of my jackets and t-shirts and sweatshirts were hanging up just as they were, but they were all organized by color. The greens with the greens, the whites with the whites, the reds with the reds, the blues with the blues. But they weren't organized like a rainbow or anything. They were just kind of bunched together by color and shade. It was clear that the clothing of similar shades were bunched closer to each other. And I'm gonna be honest with you, I almost started to cry looking at it because I wish I could tell you that I organized my closet by color, but I don't. I just hang stuff up. Like sometimes I'll try to hang jackets by jackets and t-shirts by t-shirts, but that's the extent to my organization. I don't do that. Someone else did that and it wasn't like that when I left this morning. Somebody was here and they organized my closet by color. Today's video is sponsored by Factor, the ultimate solution to streamline your fitness goals. Just training from home isn't enough. You gotta keep your nutrition on point as well. And I don't want you guys compromising on health or flavor. I want you guys exercising. I want you guys eating right. But I understand you're busy. I understand everybody's busy. Sometimes we just need some help, and that's where Factor comes in. See, with Factor, every single meal is a carefully curated masterpiece, crafted by a team of expert chefs and approved by dietitians to make sure everything is on point. So don't waste your time with boring meal prep. Factor meals arrive fresh, not frozen. And if you don't believe me, let's go make one. Look how easy this is. Remove this, place on this, and then put in this for 7 minutes. And then like four more after you stir it up. And just like that, you're back on the bike eating fresh, healthy meals. Damn, that's actually really good. Anyway, I'm like astonished with how good this is. This is so good. They're ready to heat up just like I did and enjoy in minutes. It was fire. Speaking from personal experience, this is a game changer for me. As you can see, I like to have my gym at home. I like to cook at home, but if I don't have time to cook at home, I like to order Factor. I just wanna maintain consistency in my workouts and my diet. Factor makes that possible for me. Whether I'm rushing between editing or shooting or trying to drop a new story for you guys, Factor is a staple in my life and helps me work more efficiently. You could do both. You could be productive and eat healthy with Factor. Visit factor75.com or click the link below or scan the QR code on this video. And make sure you use Dougie50 at checkout for an exclusive 50% off your first box, along with free wellness shots for life. Let me show you the wellness shots. Poof, wellness shots without missing a stride. I didn't even get off the bike. That's how convenient Factor is. At factor75.com using code Dougie50. So click the link below or scan the QR code on this video and optimize your nutrition. So I tried my best to give every detail from that party and that night itself, but I really sped through the following week and I left out so many details. I asked if anybody would want more details in my last video, and over 100,000 people let me know in the comments on YouTube and TikTok that they would like to know the details of that following week. So here are those details. Once I got home from the party, I just started freaking out because part of me didn't even want to believe it. And I even found myself trying to convince myself that it didn't happen. That what I saw through that window was some type of game or some type of charade. But as comforting as it would have been to brush it off as something fake, what I saw through that window was just too real. I'm not going to go into explicit detail, but I thought long and hard about what details I could give to paint the picture clearer for you. They had the new people taking turns laying in a fancy coffin, while like a group of older ones stood around in a circle around the coffin taking turns. And they were doing whatever they pleased to the newcomer on camera like it was some type of humiliation ritual, while all of the others stood around that big circle cheering or just chatting while they were being served drinks by very new people, if you know what I'm saying. And it really seemed like everything that they were doing was for the cameras. Like the purpose of this room was to get footage from newcomers that was so graphically heinous that if it was released to the public, they would never even be able to explain it. And the public humiliation would be too severe to ever recover their career or their life. And the people that were serving drinks in that room weren't the same people that were serving drinks in the other rooms. It was as if they were saving these extremely new servers for this room and beyond. That's all I'm going to say about that, and now I'm going to move on to the week after. I was not expecting that night to go like that. And I never would have had Joe come visit me under those circumstances. Me and Joe had planned that visit for weeks, and I had been so excited to see him and to show him around LA. We had this whole fun itinerary planned, and I was almost using this trip as an excuse to have a staycation. I'm not the type of person to not have my stuff together when somebody's coming to visit me. I even hate the thought of bringing somebody all the way across the country into an unstable environment. Traveling is stressful enough, not to mention it's expensive. So if somebody comes to visit me, I really try to take their time seriously. Because I know that I would hate to go visit somebody and you show up to like a dirty house. And then they're having a car issue. And then they have a messed up, unclear work schedule. I don't know. I just want people to feel safe, comfortable, and taken care of when they come visit me. I just want them to feel like they could travel to a stable environment so they can enjoy their trip. So when all of that went down, I started spiraling at the thought of Joe coming to visit me right after. When I look back at it, it might have been the thing that held me together though. I was trying hard to stay calm, think rationally, and not scare Joe. That I actually kind of convinced myself that I was okay. I might have let my paranoia get the best of me if I hadn't felt responsible for Joe's safety. And I might have done something stupid and irrational. It also might have helped because I was constantly on the move the entire time he was there. Just going from tourist attraction to tourist attraction. And everywhere we went, we were just constantly surrounded by masses of people. Not to mention, at night, I had somebody sleeping at the house, which is something that I usually didn't have. And honestly, I only thought about it this way in retrospect. I wasn't actively avoiding these people like this. I was pretending like everything was okay to Joe, and pretending to have a good time at all of these places. I was honestly just trying to be a good vacation host, but I do think it worked to my favor, because we were just constantly in crowded places surrounded by a bunch of witnesses. And I was sleeping in an apartment with a brand new police officer that's expected to return to duties in a week. I could only imagine that this must have made me a much harder target to deal with. And it was all by chance and by accident. If Joe hadn't visited, I probably would have just locked myself in my apartment. And I probably wouldn't have left. And whoever those people were would have known my location at all times. And easily could have planned something worse. And I just remember that the way their tone changed in that second letter that they sent me was just terrifying. The first day that Joe was there, we went to Runyon Canyon, which is always super packed, and it was super packed that day. And right after we did Runyon Canyon, we went and got lunch at a very busy Korean barbecue spot. So we just went from Runyon Canyon to West Hollywood, two very crowded places. Then after we ate, we wanted to walk it off, so we went and walked down the Hollywood Walk of Fame, which is probably the most crowded street in all of LA. It's probably the dirtiest too. So there was virtually no opportunity to confront me that day without hundreds of witnesses. This must have been frustrating for them, and it showed in the letter, saying that what I did was the worst mistake I ever made, and that the curiosity killed the cat. That isn't just slightly threatening. That's a threat laced with anger. It's very clear to me now that they were trying to scare me into doing something stupid. But luckily, I just kept moving. I still to this day do not know how they overheard me and Joe talking about getting half and half, when we were just chatting about half and half for our coffees the next morning. There was absolutely nobody around when we said it, so I can only assume that there was some kind of bug in the apartment that was listening in, because it was one of the last things that we talked about before heading to bed. I had gotten a cheap air mattress for Joe to sleep on while he was visiting, but it had a slight leak in it, so I told him to sleep in my bed while he stayed, and I told him that I would deal with the air mattress because I felt like it would be so rude to, again, have somebody visit from across the country and then treat them so poorly. So I blew up that air mattress in my bedroom, not the living room, so we could both sleep in the bedroom with the door locked. We didn't have anywhere else to sleep that night, so I just had to make it work. I was so paranoid that the only reason I was able to fall asleep was because I barely had gotten any sleep from the night before, and we had an incredibly active day. I passed out due to exhaustion and fatigue, not due to relaxation. And when I had finally woken up, and Joe had implied that I had gotten up early to go get half and half, my paranoia went back to 1,000. And he was already in the process of making himself a pot of coffee. And I still didn't want to scare him, so I just went along with it. And for that couple minutes, I was just staring at the half and half on the table. And I was just trying to understand, trying to wrap my head around how it could have gotten here. Because I knew for sure that I didn't buy it. I know that we joked about not having it last night, and right there it hit me that somebody had been in our apartment the night before. But still, for some reason, I just couldn't get myself to tell Joe. So I just twisted and said, "Yo, you're on vacation, let's go get a special coffee from a shop nearby." It felt so crazy being so scared of a bottle of creamer, but something in my gut just told me to not let Joe drink it. Even if it was just a subliminal threat to let me know that they were listening to every single word that I said, it still wasn't worth the risk of potentially getting poisoned or drugged. And in hindsight, I just think it was a way for them to tell me that they were listening and to let me know that they would be aware if I told Joe anything that I saw. I didn't think it was a bottle of poison, but I just couldn't take that risk. This made me even more apprehensive to fill Joe in. And the threat that they did worked. I played off the weird half and half, and I just went on playing tour guide. And we went a couple blocks away from the apartment, just to a nice coffee shop, and something a little bit odd happened. To this day, I don't really know if it was another threat or if it was a complete coincidence. But me and Joe were just waiting in a long line because this was a popular coffee shop. And two girls were behind us talking, you know, pretty loud, which obviously isn't uncommon because they just seemed like they were having a good time at first. But I couldn't help but to eavesdrop a little bit on their conversation, because for a second, Joe was just looking at the menu and I had just a moment of time to listen in instead of having to converse. And I swear to you, these two girls were having the exact same conversation that me and Joe did the night prior about the half and half. And I'm not talking about the concept, like who doesn't have half and half, haha, funny, funny. I mean, they said the exact same five sentences back and forth to each other as me and Joe did the night before. I'm talking verbatim. They did it verbatim with the exact same cadence, enunciation, and emphasis on specific words, mimicking our banter style to a T. And Joe even noticed it because he was eavesdropping a bit too, and nudged me after they finished the banter and he was just laughing a bit. He found the coincidence funny and he apparently found one of the girls cute. So he turned around and started chatting them up. And he basically just said to them, I just told him the same thing yesterday, pointing at me. And he just gave kind of like a warm, friendly laugh, opening up conversation with these girls, just to see if they were open to chat with us, maybe have some banter with us. And this is why I'm not positive it was a threat. These girls were so nice to us, and they didn't come off as threatening or standoffish. But something just didn't feel right about how precise their delivery was. Especially when I knew that somebody planted that half and half the night before. So I probably just looked like the most insecure, anxious guy in the world, while Joe is just chatting these girls up. And I'm just looking like the real introvert in the friendship because Joe has vacation energy. He's just talking with these girls and I'm just standing there not saying a word. I'm just anxiously standing there trying to read their body language. And I'm just trying to pick up any potentially venomous tones in their voice. And they really didn't give me any sign of foul play, except for hearing them mimic us verbatim. And then eventually, of course, it was our turn to order drinks, so the conversation broke off. We ordered, and then it was their turn, and apparently they had ordered ahead online. And they just grabbed their pre-made drinks, and they left before us. And that felt slightly off to me, because usually people that order online just skip the line. And they usually will just go pick up their order on the other end. But these girls decided to wait in line behind us. Again, I'm not sure about this one, but that just felt off to me. And after we had our coffee, we had our entire day planned. We were gonna go see a movie first because it was gonna be gloomy outside until the afternoon. So we might as well spend today doing an indoor activity. Then we were gonna head to Santa Monica Pier and Beach for the day. So we leave the coffee shop and we start heading back to the car. And I just can't relax and I'm just looking around everywhere we go. And I'm just looking for any suspicious activity from anyone. I was out there looking at grandma's weird at this point. I didn't feel like I could trust anybody but Joe. Every thought that I would have would just be so intrusive. And the intrusive thought would just start to spiral into an even worse thought. And I look down the wrong aisle of cars in the lot and my stomach drops. Because I just think right away, oh, somebody stole my car. They must have stolen it. They must have took it just to keep me stranded and vulnerable. But then I just hear Joe calmly say, yo, it's this aisle over here, Doug. And then I just start to feel so bad because Joe doesn't have any idea about my internal panic. And I could tell that he's starting to sense that something is off by a couple of looks that he was shooting me. But when it's just me and him, I'm doing a really good job of just playing it off. But when it comes to interactions with new people or just strangers in general, he must know that something's off. Because I'm not an introvert. I'm usually really chatty. And I have absolutely no issues talking to strangers. Not to mention, I don't usually visibly panic if I don't find my car right away. So anyway, once Joe points out where the car is, I compose myself. We were headed to the movies at AMC Broadway near Santa Monica. So we would be close to the Santa Monica Pier already so we could walk around thereafter. Once we get up to the car, I get a little bit of relief once I get in and the doors are locked. Until I turn my key and I notice something a little bit unusual. The left turn signal was on and blinking, as if I had turned it on right before I had parked the car and turned it off. So my head starts spinning, thinking about what direction I came in when we came into the parking lot originally. I'm just thinking, like, did I turn left into the lot, or did I turn left coming into this spot? And I come to the conclusion that I 100% turned right coming into this lot. And I definitely turned right into the spot as I parked. So the only thing that would make sense is if I hit the turn signal down as I was getting out of the car, which is absolutely possible. And I've probably done it before, I just thought nothing of it. So I just calm myself again and I just do my best to act okay while I'm just slowly getting us to Santa Monica through that traffic. And again, we just so happened to be in an extremely busy area. And we were gonna go see a movie on a Tuesday, which is a notoriously busy day because the movie theaters run discounts on Tuesdays, which again is a great place to be surrounded by potential witnesses. And I made sure that when we got there in that parking lot, as I got out, I looked back in and I made sure that my blinker was not on before turning off the car and closing the door. And I just made a mental note, 100% that blinker is not on. And we go in and we go watch this movie called War Dogs that stars Jonah Hill and Miles Teller. And it's just about these two dudes that get rich off gun running. It's one of my favorite movies if you haven't seen it. But it had this theme to it about not taking crap from anybody. There's a tone to that movie that just makes you want to take control of your own life and just fight back against anybody that's trying to mistreat you. And as corny as this sounds, I really needed that at the time. I felt like a total victim up until that point. But the way that they portrayed the main character's friendship and how they handled people trying to screw them over and mess with them was a little mindset change that I needed. I wasn't alone out here. My best friend was with me, and for a minute there walking out of that movie theater, I felt ready to fight back or to straight up confront somebody that was trying to mess with me. But that is until we got back to the car. I really, truthfully felt better for a moment, and I was just riding off the energy of that movie. And then I just turn the keys of my ignition, and I see that left turning signal just blinking in my face, like it was mocking me. This was an old beat up car, but I swear the turning signal had not randomly turned on until this day. And it happened twice, even after I made a complete mental note of it for the movie. And this thing is right in front of my face, blinking back on, like somebody was trying to let me know that they were going everywhere with us today. And if we leave our car unattended, they can access it at any time. And I frantically turn the blinker off, and then I whip my head around to see if somebody's hiding in the back seat. And when I see that nobody's back there and the back seat is clear, then I start just peering into every single car in the parking lot. And I'm just trying to see if anybody's watching us, see if there's anybody for me to confront, just see if anybody's lurking around us following. But it just looks like a bunch of regular people doing regular people things. This instance in particular made me absolutely positive that something was going on. I know for sure that I left that blinker off, and I know for sure that I didn't hit it on the way in. So now I'm at the point where I don't even want to leave my car unattended. But I still don't feel like I have enough hard evidence to fill Joe in about what's happening. I still feel crazy. I literally felt like he would look at me different if I told him and filled him in on what I thought was going on, especially if I didn't have any hard proof. Everything so far was just so vague, and it could just be easily written off by accidents or chance. So I'm just still stuck in this situation where I'm playing tour guide, and I'm just riding around Los Angeles with my cortisol level at an all-time high. I have to move my car out of this lot and get it closer to Santa Monica Pier, but I'm so scared to leave it unattended. So I do something that felt like it was a good move at the time, but I do think in hindsight that it pissed them off. When we got near the pier, I valeted my car at one of those expensive valets. You know those ones where they park it right out front on a main street? And even the valet guy was a little bit confused because usually only high-end car owners do that. And my car was a piece of rolling garbage. And Joe was really confused too because it made no sense for me to spend that much money on a valet when neither of us mind walking. And I just played it off as like some kind of joke, just saying, yo, we're balling out while you're in town. And then I justified it after by complaining about how hard it is to find parking over here. And it seemed to work, and we eventually got into the pier and we just spent our entire day there. We were just messing around in the arcade, and we were just chilling on the beach, grabbing lunch nearby, just killing time at Santa Monica. We were there for hours, literally the entire day. As long as the sun was up, we just stayed at Santa Monica. Again, by chance, I spent the day in massive crowds of people surrounded by thousands of witnesses in public. And I keep stressing that because I didn't realize how smart it was to do that until way after. And the day was pretty fun for what it was, even with the undertone of paranoia. And it was even better when we got back to our car at the valet and it was not touched. No blinker on, nothing. because it was basically being guarded by the valet with tons of witnesses around. Nobody would have the privacy to break into it out there. And I felt a little bit of relief because I felt like I fought back a little bit with that. The only issue was that fighting back costed me money. And there's no way that I could do that everywhere I went. And I probably couldn't even do it again this week if I wanted any money to have to do activities with Joe. So that moment of relief and that moment of victory was fleeting, and my mind just started spiraling on my way home. I was so nervous to go back to that building or potentially bump into somebody that knew that I went to that party, or even bump into David. I didn't want to be around anybody but Joe. I was also so scared of what I was going to come home to. I know that they came in the night before to drop off some half and half, but are they going to do something worse after I was gone all day? Is my apartment going to be trashed and destroyed? Are they going to come back tonight? But with all of this going through my mind, I still need to keep Joe distracted and entertained. I just need to keep conversation with him, and I need to act like I'm okay. And then I start to think about if it's not right for me to keep Joe in the dark. And I start to consider if I should fill him in, but I ultimately decide against it at that time. And it was just out of fear of looking like I'm a paranoid schizophrenic having an episode. Like, what am I gonna say? The half and half teleported into the fridge? My left blinker is threatening me? Those two girls at the coffee shop were spies? There was literally no good way for me to explain it and say it. So I decided to hold off. Part of me almost wanted my apartment to be torn apart, so I could actually have some hard evidence to show him, and I could finally get some emotional support. And we pull up to the apartment complex, and I'm just scoping out the lobby as we start walking in. And I'm just looking for any potential interaction I might need to have. But I don't see anybody I recognize or anybody that's going to talk to me in this immediate moment. And we get all the way through the lobby and into the elevator. And I'm so happy that we got through that lobby without any friction. But right as the elevator door is about to close, somebody sticks their hand in it to keep it open. And my heart jumps because I was so excited for a silent elevator ride in peace. And I'm so scared that it's going to be somebody that I saw at the party. But I quickly realize who it actually is. It was that very kind friend that warned me about the party before I went to it. And he would usually greet me with a really warm smile and probably some jokes. But he had a look on his face that I've never seen. He walked onto the elevator and just greeted me very plainly, almost as if he didn't know me. And I was just going over so many things in my head to say to him. But then I realized that he wasn't being mean to me. He looked disappointed in me. He knew that I went to that party, and he must have assumed that I went through with it. And I had to say something to him because the disappointment on his face was hurting my heart. But he wasn't looking at me, so I just gave him a slight nudge. And I just said, I didn't do it. I left before they did it. And he looked at me with his eyes wide, and they were a little bit watery. But the disappointment was gone. But as quickly as the disappointment left his eyes, concern entered his eyes. And as he was leaving his elevator on his floor, he said, I'm very happy for you, but they probably aren't. The elevator doors closed in between us, and I know that he's right, and he actually understands what I'm going through. But Joe's a little bit confused with that interaction, and I still decide to keep him in the dark for some reason. And I just say that some of the other guys in the building played a prank on him, and he didn't really like it, and that just happened the other day. And I just brush it off as content stuff that doesn't matter. I see that over 90% of the people that are watching these videos on a weekly basis aren't subscribed to the channel. It would mean the world to me if you would subscribe and hit the notification bell. I'm trying to get to 1 million subscribers as soon as I possibly can. And I know you guys are watching and enjoying the videos. So please just hit subscribe and hit the notification bell, and I'll continue making videos that you love and enjoy. And please like and comment. Enjoy the show. The elevator just keeps going up, and it finally gets to our floor and the doors open. And I start to just get this intense sense of despair. Like, I almost feel like we might be walking into some kind of trap. I feel like my apartment might be torn to shreds when we get there. And I'm gonna have to figure out some way how I'm gonna explain this to Joe. Or even worse, somebody's gonna be waiting for us in the apartment, waiting to threaten me. I just have fight or flight flowing through my veins, and my heart is like beating out of my chest as I'm slowly opening the door. And I just start swinging the door open slowly, and I'm just peeking through the side to try to see if somebody's waiting in there. I don't know if somebody's gonna be in there like ready to attack me. And I'm going slow, so if I see anybody approaching me, I could slam the door in their face. I felt like all of the drawers in my apartment were just going to be ripped out and thrown all over the floor. And I thought there was going to be spray-painted messages on my walls and threats carved into my countertops. And my furniture was just going to be tattered and flipped and thrown all over the house. But as I open the door all the way, there's no sign anywhere of foul play. It's all just clean and exactly how we left it. And Joe still has no idea what I'm concerned about, So he just marches right into the door and straight to the bedroom with no care in the world. And my stomach was just doing flips and curling, watching him open the bedroom door so carelessly. But nothing happened. Nobody was in there. Nothing was in there. So I just start locking the door behind us, and I'm planning on heading straight to the fridge to check to see if somebody left us another gift from our secret admirers. And I felt a little bit of relief and safety knowing that the apartment was clear until I started locking the door. And I was barely looking at the lock while I was doing it. I just kept my eyes up with one eye peeping through the peephole as my hands were just fiddling with the keys and the knob. I just wanted to make sure that nobody was creeping up to the door or following us to the room. And I saw somebody turn the corner through the peephole as I was turning the lock closed. And I immediately started to panic. But not because of the person that I saw down the hallway through the peephole. That lady is my sweet neighbor. I was panicking because the same moment I saw this person through my peephole, I felt an oddity on my lock. I was able to close my lock without looking at it because I had gotten so used to the feel of it. I would always brush my fingers over the top of the lock to feel where it was. My lock had a small nub on the front of it, and I'd brush my fingers over it every day to find it, like I was reading Braille, and then I'd turn it. But when I brushed my finger over it today while I was peeping through the peephole, the second I saw the lady, I didn't feel that nub. I felt that it was smooth. There was no small bump on it. It felt brand new. So I turned my attention towards the lock instead of the peephole, and I get a better look at it, and I'm right. This is a brand new lock and doorknob, like somebody had replaced it while we were gone for the day. And then my mind starts flooding with questions and doubts. Because I had requested to get this thing fixed because the lock always jams. It never locks smoothly. I would always have to mess with it and jiggle it closed. But I had asked for it to be fixed about 3 months earlier, but I never put in a formal request to the property. I just mentioned the issue to the property manager in passing. And the property manager told me that I would have to file a formal request to have it fixed, but she would let the stationary engineer know that it should be fixed. But the issue was is that I never put in the formal request after that. And I never brought it up to them again. I just got used to it and I just moved on. And they also never mentioned to me that they were going to fix it. Usually for any maintenance thing, they would let me know that they were coming beforehand. Or they would leave a note on the door letting me know what they did. So I'm just freaking out internally, not knowing if this was done by my building or by these people. Why would they change the lock if they had already been in here while we were sleeping? They had already gotten in here unscathed, so what would be the point of changing a lock that you already have access to? Were they just doing it so that I would notice? My keys still worked in the lock, so it definitely wasn't to keep me out of my place. And that alone made me feel like it must have been the repairman at the building. My keys still works, so it must still be the building. And I'm just in my head shuffling around these questions, trying to calm myself down with logical answers. There's no way they replaced my doorknob and lock just so that I wouldn't notice that they were here. Like, how would they know that I feel the nub on the lock before closing it? That's only something that I would know. They could have noticed that the lock would jam and that I would have noticed that, but how would they know about the nub? But then my mind just starts spiraling to something else. Maybe they fixed the lock that would jam so they could more efficiently come in and out of my apartment and not have to worry about the lock jamming and me waking up. Maybe they didn't anticipate that I would notice that the nub was gone. Clearly, my mind was in a horrible, fear-filled place at this point. I was just tormenting myself by trying to dissect something that could so easily just have been the property manager fixing something for me. And Joe was already on the couch, just chilling, scrolling on his phone. And then he just called over to me, "Yo, what are we watching?" while he was picking up the remote to turn on the TV. And I'm still just trying to act as normal as I can with him because I still have no real proof to show him. So I just reply, "Yo, we can't go wrong with a Marvel movie." And then I look up at him and I see that he's having a hard time with the remote. And I could tell he's just picking his arm up and moving it in different angles towards the TV like he's having a hard time with turning the TV. And he just replies, "Yep, Marvel sounds good, but I think your remote died." And this made no sense because I had replaced those batteries on that remote no more than 10 days ago. And I've barely used it since then. So I grab the remote from him and I just pop open the back. And the brand new batteries that I had just put in there are still in there. They're just sitting there perfectly opposite of each other. You know how the batteries sit? They just sit yin and yang. So I just try to turn it on and it's not working for me either. So I look back at the batteries and I notice something odd. They're in place and they're opposite of each other, but they're backwards. The positive and negative sides are switched. I needed to flip them both in the other direction. So that's what I did. And then I clicked the power button and the TV turned right on. And I just put the cap back on the batteries and I hand the remote back to Joe. But my world is crumbling. because I know for sure that I put those batteries in properly. Listen, I know it, and I used that remote a couple times since then, and I checked to make sure they worked right after I replaced them. And I just know it's these people now. It just has to be. The doorknob is one thing. That could be a property manager. But the batteries being flipped right after I replaced them, that's a completely different story. That's a different thing. And those are two things that only I could possibly notice. How would I be able to explain that to somebody? It would be so easy to just say, there was probably a maintenance guy here fixing your lock. And maybe he flipped your batteries as a prank. Or maybe he accidentally dropped the remote and just put the batteries back in wrong. It would just be so easy to dismiss the things that I'm noticing. And it would be so easy to call me crazy. And I have literally no proof whatsoever to back up my claims. Just little small things that I'm noticing. So I tell Joe that I'm gonna go change. But what I'm really doing is going to see if other battery power items are flipped too. And I go into my room and the first thing that I see is that my alarm clock is off. I had one of those alarm clocks that you plug into the wall, but they have the battery option too, just in case your alarm clock gets unplugged. It has a backup charge overnight so you don't miss an alarm. So I run up to it and I peek behind my nightstand to see if it's unplugged. And it was unplugged, but it wasn't unplugged fully. It looks like somebody pulled it out just enough and to the left a little bit, so one of the prongs was fully out, as if somebody could have like bumped the nightstand and it just yanked it out just a little bit. And this plug was just out just enough for it to be off. And I know there's batteries in the alarm clock too, but I always had it plugged in, so I've never relied on those batteries. But it was off. And I peel the back of the alarm clock off, and I look at those batteries and I inspect the positive and negative sign. And again, these batteries are flipped in the opposite way. But still, I don't have proof. I put these batteries in this alarm clock probably over a year ago, and the plug doesn't look like it's yanked out of the wall. It looks like it was accidentally pulled too far. There's no proof here. So I just start searching for another item that has batteries. I don't have any more in my room, so I just go to my bathroom. And I know that I have an electric razor. And I'm just trying to be as discreet as possible, not make a scene in front of Joe. So I just call to him and I just go, yo, I'm gonna use the bathroom real quick. I'll be right out. And I close the bathroom door behind me and I just pick up my electric razor and I'm just looking at it. I didn't even want to flip this switch on. I didn't even wanna know. I just wanted all of this weirdness to stop. I just wanted to go home or at least have something that I could tell Joe. And I'm just staring at this power button for like 30 seconds and I'm just praying that when I flip this up, it turns on and everything else was just a coincidence. And I'm just yelling at myself in my head to just flip the switch, just turn it on, just get to the bottom of this. It's going to turn on. Nobody's messing with you. I just gotta turn it on. Because if this one doesn't turn on, I know that all of this has been on purpose. Because coincidences don't happen like this. If this thing doesn't turn on, then everything, including as far back as the girls at the coffee shop talking just like us verbatim, it's all been them. So I do it and I flip the switch and just silence, no buzz, it didn't turn on. And I just open the back and there they are, two batteries in there, flipped, mocking me. It's been them this whole time, I know for sure. They were here while we were out. And now I just start to think of things that they could have stolen or other things that they might have changed. Now I just want to start ripping my apartment apart to look for clues or evidence, just anything. Or even bugs hidden in lamps or just anything in general that I could show to Joe so he'll believe me. I can't tell Joe about blinkers and batteries. Nobody in the world would believe that. So I just start inspecting my lamps and my mattress for bugs, but I just don't find any. So the next logical thing to me is my closet. Maybe they put something back there. Or maybe I should check my drawers to see if any of my valuables were stolen. But I decide to check my closet first because it's easier. So I slide my closet door open and I'm met with something that I didn't even know could strike fear in my heart. It's not like it was something that was scary. It wasn't a body or a note. The fear came from the fact that it was another thing that I couldn't explain. How were they so creative with this? Like, how do they even come up with doing these things to people? My closet looked clean, tidy, and organized. And that's what was scary. All of my jackets and t-shirts and sweatshirts were hanging up just as they were, but they were all organized by color. The greens with the greens, the whites with the whites, the reds with the reds, the blues with the blues. But they weren't organized like a rainbow or anything. They were just kind of bunched together by color and shade. It was clear that the clothing of similar shades were bunched closer to each other. And I'm going to be honest with you, I almost started to cry looking at it because I wish I could tell you that I organized my closet by color, but I don't. I just hang stuff up. Like sometimes I'll try to hang jackets by jackets and t-shirts by t-shirts, but that's the extent to my organization. I don't do that. Someone else did that, and it wasn't like that when I left this morning. Somebody was here and they organized my closet by color. But again, it wasn't so obvious. I don't have this big, massive wardrobe where you look at it and there's hundreds of pieces of clothing of major bright colors that if you align them by color, they look like a rainbow. My stuff is just normal. But when I looked at it, you could see that it was rearranged to shades of color, and I didn't do that. It was subtle and it was different than I left it, and it was clearly done by color. Who are these people and where do they come up with this? I really thought I was going crazy at that point. I wasn't sure if something broke in my brain and I was permanently damaged. I was seriously considering if I had developed some type of mental illness that produces this level of paranoia and hallucinations. Whatever protocol they follow of harassing people, it works. They were just such subtle little things that would drive a person insane. I really broke at that moment, and I was just trying to think of ways that I could explain it to Joe. And I knew right then that I needed help, and I needed to figure out a way to tell him. But I just couldn't figure it out at that moment. I couldn't figure out how to break the ice of that conversation. The idea of having to bring it up and bursting Joe's bubble while he's on vacation was an absolute nightmare. So I just head back to the living room, and I just ask him, "You want something to drink?" The previews were about to end, and the movie was about to start. And I decided that I was going to spend this movie figuring out how I was going to break it to him. And I promised myself that I would say it right when the movie ended. And he just replies, "A water bottle would be nice." So I went to the kitchen and I just grabbed us a couple water bottles. I didn't even bother inspecting the fridge to see if there was any new gifts in there. I was just numb and broken and grabbed the water bottles and closed the fridge. And I always kept a flashlight on the counter, and as I was walking past it, I was just numb and broken, so I just grabbed it and flicked it on. Didn't turn on, flicked it off, put it down. I didn't even care that it didn't turn on. I didn't even check the batteries. I just knew that they were flipped. When I tell you I was mentally defeated at this point, they successfully got their point across to me. They were here, they were in my space, they were threatening me, and there was nothing I could do about it. So I just handed the water bottle to Joe, and I just sat down for the movie. And we just watched Captain America's Civil War. And I loved that movie, but I definitely wasn't enjoying it this time around. It was actually really weird because the villain in that movie is named Zemo, and he basically spends the entire movie manipulating all of the Avengers to fight each other just by planting small bits of evidence here and there that could create division and tension, just enough to create distrust between all of the Avengers. He just manipulates them all like they're puppets, and none of them have any idea who's doing it. They all just think it's each other, and the team begins to unravel. I literally felt like them. I felt like there was some anonymous man or organization that was planting little small things, little seeds of doubt all around me. So I would just lose trust in everything around me and eventually lash out. But Zemo had a motive. The Avengers basically killed his whole family. Like, it made sense why he was doing what he was doing. It made no sense why they would be going this far to torment me. I was just a kid. I didn't even know what to do with the kind of information that I had. Like, they scared me enough. And I probably would have kept it to myself if they showed up and threatened me once. I was so young. I was just scared. It wasn't hard to intimidate. But that movie didn't help my mental state. It just legitimized my concerns. Watching Zemo operate in that movie, just how slick and scheming he was, it made me feel like people were capable of things like this. They would put this much effort into doing subtle things to me in my private space to scare me and just let me know that they were here. And it just felt like I was so alone. I just desperately wanted to tell someone, but I had to wait until the movie was over, but I was going to do it. I was going to tell Joe. So I'm just sitting there pretending to be enjoying this movie, but internally I'm just counting down the seconds until it's over. And the second it ends, I get to tell Joe everything that's happening. And finally, the movie ends. And I just take a deep breath, and I'm just getting ready to start my bizarre, unhinged tangent at Joe. And I look over to him, and this man is dead asleep. Completely out cold, slouched in the corner of the couch, asleep. So in my head, I'm like, guess I'm telling him in the morning. But I'm not gonna let him sleep out here by himself. If someone comes through that front door tonight, it's better that we're in the same room. So I go back into the bedroom to drag the air mattress into the living room, because there isn't enough room on the couch for me to snuggle up with Joe. And as I'm walking over there, I start dreading this night's sleep in general. Not only because I'm as scared as I've ever been, but because this air mattress leaks air. It's not the worst leak in the world, but when you wake up in the morning, you're a couple inches sunken into it. You have to refill it every night, and I know that it was already sunken in when we left. And I know that I'm not about to turn on the machine that fills it while Joe's asleep. I wanted so bad to tell Joe, but something about telling him in the morning did seem better. I don't know why, I just felt like he might believe me more in the daylight. There's something about somebody telling you something late at night that just makes you feel more skeptical about it. But if I told him over coffee in the morning, he might take it more serious. And I almost thought that it would be better to do it in public just in case he thought I was absolutely crazy, so he could leave if he wants and he doesn't feel obligated to stay the night. But as I'm going over this in my head, I grab the air mattress to drag it over, and wouldn't you know it, it's completely inflated and full. It's firm and packed with air, as if somebody didn't sleep on it the night before with the little leak that it has. Like, how do they think of doing that? Do they really have that level of an understanding of human psychology to know that refilling a mattress that has a little leak in it and the person knows it has a little leak in it is worse than verbal threats? Where did they come up with this system to torment people? It's so creative and horrifying. But like I said, I was already defeated before this. I didn't even have a moment of panic at that time. I kind of just accepted it. I just accepted the fact that there was no way I was going to be able to explain this well. And the only thing that I could do is try. And the only other thing that I could do is wedge a chair under the doorknob overnight. So they would have to break the door down, not just slip in. So I just wedged a chair in there, and then I put objects in the sliding window so they wouldn't be able to be slid open. And then I just laid down on the air mattress. At this point, Joe had stretched out on the small couch, but he looked comfy enough. And I knew that he was gonna think it was weird that I wedged the door closed. And I would have no choice but to explain myself. And I decided that I was gonna tell him that we were gonna stay at a hotel the rest of the time that he was here. So he would pack his things before we went to the coffee shop, so he would have all of his things with him in case when I started to tell him, he thought I was crazy and he could just leave with all of my things instead of having to go back to the apartment. I meant all of his things, not all of my things. I was also ready to max out my credit card to book a room for him somewhere if he did decide to leave. I just didn't like the thought of him flying all the way over here and just being stuck in my craziness. Because the only thing worse than a crazy person is a crazy person that drags you into their craziness. I didn't want to be that. If he wanted to leave after I told him, I would completely understand. So I'm just laying there going over this rant that I'm going to tell Joe. And I actually managed to doze off. And I just sleep straight through the night. I don't recall any specific dreams. I just must have been so exhausted that my body stayed in deep sleep instead of going into REM. I don't know if that's how that works, but I slept like a rock. And as I'm starting to wake up, the first thing that I notice is that the mattress is sunken in a couple inches, exactly like it should have been the night before. They could have patched the leak if they were really trying to fix my stuff for me. And I finally open my eyes and I see Joe sitting at the table looking at me. He has a worried look on his face and he just goes, "Yo, you up?" And I sit up and I'm trying to cover it up and I just go, "Yo, you ready for a surprise?" I was planning on telling him about the fun hotel that I was going to book and label it as a surprise. But he looks at me really serious and he goes, "You going to tell me what that is about?" While he's pointing at the chair wedged in the door. And I just look at it and I don't even know where to start. And he follows up by saying, "So they're doing pranks that bad here, huh?" As if he was referring to the interaction with my friend in the elevator. He was basically telling me that he didn't believe the excuse that I fed him. And I really don't know how to start, so I just say, "Bro, I have something I need to tell you." And he just cuts me off and says, "I know you do. You think I can't tell something's off with you? You're my best friend. Tell me who's messing with you. You've seemed paranoid and off this whole trip." And I reply to him, "I'm booking us a hotel tonight. I'll tell you everything over coffee. We just need to leave here. Just please grab all your stuff." And Joe didn't seem to be weirded out by what I was saying. He just seemed concerned for me. And he packed his stuff in less than 5 minutes and he was ready to go. He was just being so understanding and supportive. And I felt like I was going to ruin that when I actually started telling him what was going on. I thought that once I said it and I started explaining it, he would look at me different forever and not be supportive anymore. I was so nervous to have to get to that coffee shop and start explaining myself. And I packed as much of my stuff as I could too before heading down to the lobby. We didn't see anybody on the elevator on the way down, but once we got to the lobby, I could hear people loudly talking and laughing. And I heard a very specific laugh. I knew that David was here. And we turned the corner and there he is, just mingling with some other creators, just acting like his normal self. Like what we went through just the other day didn't happen. I didn't even go through what he went through, and I felt like my life was shattering. But there he is, in this lobby having a good time. And I'm just staring at this kid so confused as we walk by until he finally looks up at me. And we lock eyes and I just immediately beeline towards him. I don't even know what I'm gonna say, but I just can't help myself. But I just need to confront him. I need to try to get some answers from him. And I think all I got out was like, why are you acting like nothing happened? But he just looked at me like he was not gonna say a word to me. And I followed up with some generic like, don't you have anything to say? But he just looked at me and extended his hand with a cup of coffee. And I didn't know what else to do but just take it. I just assumed that he was handing it to me in a disrespectful way of saying, here's something for you, now leave me alone. But something in his eyes told me that this meant something, because once I took it, he just walked away. So I look at this cup of coffee and it has something wrapped around it. It has a napkin around it. And there was like Sharpie written on it. And it just said, I'm sorry, you have to leave with him tomorrow. Otherwise, it's me and you. And I start looking around for him a little bit because I want to ask some follow-up questions on this sincere message. But Joe walks up to me and he says, bro, what was that about? And I just say, dude, I'll tell you at the coffee shop. Let's get out of here. So we get to my car, and as we're walking up to it, something just feels off. And I can't tell why, but something just doesn't seem right about the car. It looks like my car. My keys opened the car. It has the same interior, but something about sitting in it just felt foreign to me. I wasn't sure if it was because I knew that somebody had been in it the day before, messing with the left blinker, or just the general paranoia that I had. Something just felt off about it, and I couldn't put a finger on it until I put it into reverse, and right there it hit me. I was not sitting in my car. It looked just like it, but this definitely wasn't my car. The gear shifter went smoothly from park to reverse. My gear shifter doesn't do that. My gear shifter is damn near broken, and you have to do a very specific like button push and shake just to get it out of park. And this one just glided from park to reverse. So then I look at it, and I notice that this one doesn't have all of the scratches on top of it like mine had. Mine had all of these scratches on it because I used to have one of those like spiral wristbands that you put your keys onto it, and I'd always hit the keys off of the gear shifter as I grabbed it. I would also even scrape the top of the gear shifter with the keys, almost like a little OCD tick while I was in traffic, almost like fidget spinner. I would just scrape it instead of spinning a fidget. And once I knew that wasn't my gear shifter, I started to look for all of the other imperfections that I knew that my car had. From little burns in the seats and the carpets from knowing my friends were like smoking it, and then wind blows in through the window and knocks the ember off the tip of the cigarette and it like burns a little hole. I knew where those were. And then just other stains from spills that I know I had. I even looked into the cup holder in the middle because I knew I left gummy worms in there on a hot day and they melted and turned into this horrible goo and seeped into the cracks. I could never get it out. I knew that the cracks of this cup holder were lined with gummy worm goo. None of these imperfections were there. And I knew that this was not my car. So I just jump out of this thing and I run around the back and check my license plate. The license plate is mine. And then I check the glove compartment. All of my paperwork and stuff is in there too. But I know that this isn't my car. And this was the first mistake that they made. Joe had spent years in this car with me, and he had even drove it a bunch. He would be able to tell that this was not my car if I pointed these things out. And he finally snaps on me. Because I jumped out of the car and then I'm ruffling through the glove box right in front of him. He just snaps and goes, you need to tell me right now what's happening or I'm leaving. And I go, I finally can. Look at the gear shifter. Look inside of the car. Do you notice anything different? And he looks at me really confused. But then he gets out and he walks around to the driver's seat and gets in. And he moves the gear shifter from park to reverse and back and forth a few times. And then he goes, okay, so you fixed your crappy gear shifter after all these years. Why are you acting crazy and freaking out? And I say, bro, I did not do that. I think they switched my car out. And Joe looks at me with the look that I was dreading. And he looks at me like I'm crazy for a second. And he just goes, who is they? And that's when I started actually breaking down. And I just started begging him to believe me. And I started telling him that entire story that I told you guys about the party. And all of the threats and all of the things that I've been noticing while he was here. And then I showed him the note that David just gave me. And Joe was just sitting there listening intently. And I finally got done with my long, crazy sounding tangent. And he just said, I believe you. I accidentally burned your door yesterday messing with the lighter. And I wasn't going to tell you about it. The burn in the little melted piece that I did yesterday isn't there. I believe you. Let's get out of here. And we decided to take the risk of taking this car that clearly was not mine all the way to Vegas. Yes, we were worried that they might have put a tracker in it. or cut the brakes somehow. But we checked the brakes and we made sure that we had our hand on the emergency brake the entire ride. And when we got to Vegas, I took all of my paperwork out of the car and I took the plates off of it. And we just abandoned the car and I flew home. And I never went back there after that, and I haven't spoken to David since then. I made some mistakes and I left some details out of part one, but I made sure I got everything in chronological order this time, and I made sure I made no mistakes. I think I made no mistakes in this one. And I tried to not rush it. I tried to just give you guys every detail. This was my entire experience with that part of the world. And it seems like they are all getting canceled and exposed in 2024. I believe that they are losing the power that they once had. And I'm not scared of them anymore because of all of the others coming out and exposing it. I will show any of the other items. Just let me know in the comments if you're still interested. Otherwise, I'll just move on with my life. I have some pictures and videos of myself in LA around that time period. Nothing crazy specific to the situation, but I had some other stuff if you're curious. If you guys have been liking this story, if you guys checked some of my other content, which I encourage you to do, and you like that style of content as well, please subscribe and hit the notification bell. I wasn't expecting everybody to be so interested in this specific story. Posted it months ago. Happy you guys like it, but I would greatly appreciate if you guys watched some of my other work and supported the channel and helped an independent artist get after it, so I don't need to sell my soul to the horrible devilish hedonists. Appreciate you.